15, stop with the 16, fucking counting. 17, what are you counting for?
18,
take
19.
It easy. Oh, God. What the fuck are you doing, mate? Jesus Christ, relax. He's not your enemy.
Well, he fucking is now, isn't he?
Rugged like Pentridge Prison. When Chopper was thugging, inflicting ventricle incisions on inmates with comb blades, homemade scissors. I'll teach you how to shoot friends and influence people. Happiness is a warm gun, my nine represents evil. The most feared underworld executioner, stab you in the neck, it's a gruesome conclusion for ya. A bloody nuisance, they need a transfusion for ya. Mass confusion, a blur, if you ask and choose it occurs. Study this, you're lying in a pool of blood like piss. Dying, you slapped on me, you forgot what thug life is. Peep the crime memoirs, candidly confessing the murder, arson, and torture. I'll gladly teach you a lesson. A headhunter, leaving you cunts dead if you front with a sword off, double barrel shotgun, lead dumper. If I fall, I'll get up holding a gap, baby. The opera ain't over till someone shoots the fucking fat lady.
Get in, do it, and get out blood free. Walk up, bang, bang, step back quick. When the blood hits the floor, I'm 6 feet away. Hit 'em hard, hit 'em fast, and get out quick. Get in, do it, and get out blood free. Walk up, bang, bang, step back quick. When the blood hits the floor, I'm 6 feet away. Hit him hard, hit him fast, and get out quick.
You're not thinking clear, motherfucker, you're stinking of fear. You'll get chopped in the head or fucking shot dead while drinking beer. Don't give a fuck if there's a lot of you. Bust a shot at you, I got at you. Paying G's to have motherfuckers body you. I'm popular for popping shit off properly. Getting pissed off and punching you in the face, probably. Possibly my enemies thought I'd get shot, but I'm walking around physically intact, and you're not. I got a bullet with your name on it. I don't see you dodging it unless somehow you could get your brain armored. You get whacked in this chess game, death game, pawns, rooks, knights, bishops, crooks, stick ups, hit your chest frame. You dumb fags, I like to fuck cute dumb hags. I like to laugh, drink, bet, and shoot scumbags. I'm just a regular bloke, going for broke, got your jugular throat, bang it up, the blood makes you choke.
Get in, do it, and get out blood free. Walk up, bang, bang, step back quick. When the blood hits the floor, I'm 6 feet away. Hit 'em hard, hit 'em fast, and get out quick. Get in, do it, and get out blood free. Walk up, bang, bang, step back quick. When the blood hits the floor, I'm 6 feet away. Hit 'em hard, hit 'em fast, and get out quick.
I used to sell 'em their left leg. I used to say, give me some money, or so you see your left leg? I said, that leg belongs to me. I said, I'll take it with me when I'm going. I said, now, if you want that left leg, this is what it's going to cost you. You know, and I'll pull out a gun. Aim at their kneecap.
You are listening to Mark Brandon Chopper Reed. Now, Australian listeners, you will know who Chopper Reed is. You've probably heard of Chopper, you've probably seen some rendition of Chopper, be it the Chopper movie, where he was played by Eric Banner, or the characterization of Chopper done by Ronnie Johns in the Ronnie Johns Half Hour that he tours live with, who Chopper was aware of when Chopper was alive, and wasn't a big fan of, but, you know, it's fine. He never did anything about it, so I guess that's okay. For anyone who's not aware, maybe you're listening from another country, maybe you're overseas, wherever. So, Chopper is sort of like a modern-day folk hero, in a way. So, like, you might not have heard of Ned Kelly. Ned Kelly is also Victorian-based outlaw who sort of fought against the establishment, and he's a big hero in Australian folklore. Chopper is, he's like a version of Omar from The Wire, but definitely not as cool as Omar from The Wire, because he fought drug dealers and he fought criminals, and he would say a lot of things like he'd never turn his gun on a citizen, and when he was dying, he died of a liver failure, and he refused to put himself on the organ donor list because he was like, I'm not going to take a liver from a 10-year-old that needs it, which is very noble, and that's the kind of folk imagery that he evokes, and that's sort of the kind of folk ideal that he has, even though he was very much a criminal and very much a bad person. He does have that that charm about him. He's a criminal turned raconteur turned hip hop artist turned author, not necessarily in that order, but he did do all of those things. He did a storytelling show for a while that would have been perfectly placed in the Fringe Festival, and this turn of exploration artistically for music would have been perfect for the Fringe Festival, and that's why I picked him for this episode. His album, his EP, Interview of a Madman, is the perfect accompaniment to a Fringe, because sometimes an idea sounds really cool and you're not sure how it's going to turn out, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's okay, and sometimes it's great. But this album is, it's alright. I think a lot of the MCs and young rappers who got attached to it really thought that they were going to make big. Like, you know, they're attached to this genuine gangster and they're gonna blow up and this is going to be something for them. But unfortunately for them, it didn't really go anywhere. For those who aren't sure, Chopper, the raconteur circuit was perfect for Chopper because, and this is a quote, he never let the truth get in the way of a good yarn. That is the epitome of who Chopper Reed was. That and all the murder. But yeah, that's why I picked him for this one. And regular listeners of this show may have started to note by now that this is a little bit different to my regular introductions because I let the song finish. Now, the reason for that being, this episode, I could not get the time to meet with Marty. This is our Fringe wrap-up episode. But those of you who are regular listeners who have listened to a Fringe wrap-up before will know that Fringe wrap-ups usually end up being just me talking about the shows that I've seen to Marty anyway. So this, I don't know, it's definitely going to have a different feel about it, but we'll see. It's a little bit of an experiment for this episode. If you enjoyed it, fantastic. Let me know. If you didn't enjoy it, shut up. I don't want to hear from you. I don't need to know. I have enough of my own problems. Basically, this is just how it's going to have to work, because I didn't have, like, Marty and I both work to pay, you know, our respective rents. I've got to keep a roof over the head of the place here where we do the podcast, and unless you're willing to shuffle out some cash for old mate Matt and Marty, then we'll have to keep working. And that also doesn't mean I didn't get to see as many shows as I would have liked this Fringe Festival, but that's okay. I've got a good list, and we're going to go through them. This episode won't be too long, just by virtue of me being alone. I'll try not to drag it out too much, but we'll go through the shows that I saw. Though I know it seems sort of redundant, anyone who hasn't listened to one of these before, anyone who's new this episode, it seems sort of redundant doing a list of shows that are now already finished, but I tell you, a fair few of these artists will probably tour. So it's good for you to know who's coming, what's out there. If you're an artist yourself, you can get an idea of what the scene is like. Maybe you're thinking of developing an idea. You can sort of just hear what's out there. It's always good to know what's going on in the local scene. So let's get into it. So the first show I'm going to tell you about is a show called Broke by Rowena Hudson. Rowena Hudson. And listeners to previous Fringe Festival wrap-ups will have heard that name before. She's popped up a couple of times. She did a show a couple of years back called Strong Female Character, which I really loved. And if you want to hear about that show, you just go back. I think it's 2 Fringe Festival wrap-ups where the Strong Female Character first appeared. It was a beautiful, poignant show that melded personal experience with sort of consolidating herself with who her idols were as a child and how they're not necessarily the best people to be idols, you know, sort of like Indiana Joneses and stuff like that. She pulls apart those characters a little bit and how they're not the best role models for a young woman in the world trying to figure herself out. That was a beautiful show. This show is called Broke. This one is It's all about her anxieties, in particular in relation to the work that she's doing and sort of pulling together her life, her work-life balance. This is a feminist comedy about mental health, and it's quite a lovely show. Personally, I didn't think it was a strong female character, but that's not to say that it's a bad show, because let's be honest, the show itself is, well, often these kind of shows can, they get developed as time goes on, so they might find a final form eventually, but I'm pretty sure this is a first run of this show, and I'd be really curious to see it down the track, to see what shape it's taken, and if anything's changed, and if so, how much. So I feel it was a really lovely show. There was, again, a nice blend of personal experience with slightly more esoteric ideas. There was props and puppetry and audience interaction. It was a good high energy show. She worked really hard to get everybody on board and to sort of explore the ideas in these uncomfortable spaces, and I really applaud her for doing that. It's not an easy thing to do, so you should get out there and check it out. Yeah, I'm sure she's going to tour it. She's very much that kind of artist. She will tour and shape this show in such a way that it'll probably change a lot from what we've seen here. Now, there's a good fun show that I saw during this festival called A Portrait of an Artist as a Young Ham by a performer called Elizabeth Brennan. I did not know who she was prior to seeing this show. I mostly went to see the show because it had a good fun title. A Portrait of an Artist as a Young Ham. That's a fun title. You know, some Oscar Wilde wordplay. Who doesn't enjoy a bit of Oscar Wilde wordplay? Now, I did walk into the show like a minute or so late due to having to get to the venue. And the show that I saw, at no point did she actually explain. So she had a ham on stage as sort of like her straight man. It was never really explained, but I think it was just maybe just to get the title of the show, which I'm fine with, because there were some good ham puns in there, some good ham jokes in there. Essentially, the show was about sustainability. It was sort of like a cabaret that blended personal experience of working humdrum jobs and working in the arts with this bigger idea of sustainability and trying to create a show about sustainability. I think that they melded those two ideas together quite nicely. There's less songs than I would have expected for a show that's built itself as a cabaret, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I've said about shows before, a show should never be longer than it is funny if it's a comedy. And to be honest, this one, even though it's a cabaret, if you don't have more songs that are thematically appropriate, don't put them in. It's okay. It's okay to lean back a little and do a little bit of storytelling. That's fine too. But this was a good fun show. I'm sure she's going to bring it back at some point. And if you happen to see Elizabeth Brennan around doing a performance, go check her out. It was a great show. Now, this next show is definitely one of my favourites from this festival. The show was called Fishlace Jones Behind the Curtain. And Fishlace Jones is billed as the king of the independent theatre scene. So, you know, he's an actor that nobody's heard of. And that was an unnecessary burn on the independent scene. I'm sorry, independent scene. I am part of you. Nobody's heard of me ever. It's fine. No, but this is like a class that he's giving, and it's about like pulling out your inner actor. That's the conceit of the class. And goddamn, it's such a fun show. It was high energy. There was a lot of absurdist clowning, and I know like lots of audience interaction. And I know those things are kind of scary. The idea of absurdist clowning just sort of bring to mind these like scary ghouls of Marceau and Gaulier and all that sort of stuff. Don't worry, there's like, you're not gonna be locked out of the show. He uses these clowning to a high degree of absurdity and idiocy. It's sort of like Woodley in a lot of ways, I guess. In the, like heading in that direction, at least. It's not as slapsticky as Woodley. And I definitely got hints of like Gary Starr performs everything from this festival. And like, not to say that it's derivative or anything, the shows are very different shows. It's just the level at which he's performing is just so high. And Gary Starr was back for this Fringe, and I saw Gary Starr again, so it was nice to get a direct comparison between those two shows, and they're quite different shows, but I'm sure Fishless will come back to do his masterclass, his class again, and you should definitely come check it out. It's definitely a comedy festival show if ever I've seen one, so people should definitely go see Behind the Curtain with Fishless Jones. You're not going to have anywhere near as much fun as you do in that show, with some things. Oh, it was just beautiful. This, there's a show called Chunkin' It by two performers, Elise Phillips and Simon McCullough. Now, Chunkin' It was a sketch show, essentially, although the two actors never did sketches together. They both sort of did character work, so one would go off stage to prepare the next character while one did a sketch. It was good fun. I think my biggest qualm, and this is not necessarily a terrible thing, but it is something that performers need to think about. Please, guys, please think about your transitions. Think about your transitions. Because it just leaves the audience sitting there awkwardly wondering when the next performer is going to be coming back or when the next scene is going to be starting. But all in all, the show was worth checking out. The costumes were surprisingly high volume for such a like low budget show, and both performers had a good range of characters, and they showed get to show off their skills in very different ways. We were performing in the same room, so anyone who came to see my show knows the size of that room, and so for these two guys to be able to navigate that space, they did it expertly, and there was always Pringles all over the floor, all behind the stage from having them in the space. So it's just a little reminder that they were always around. But yeah, they'll undoubtedly be bringing back this show for Comedy Festival. So if you get a chance to check out, if you like sketch comedy, go check out Chunkin' It. This next performer was also in the room that I was in. His name is Jack Gow. Now, I hadn't seen Jack Gow before. He is Sydney-based, I believe. A Sydney-based comedian who is doing a storytelling show, essentially. It was stand-up, but it was very much interlacing one big story arc with smaller stories that tied the big story arc together. This was one of my favorite shows of the festival. If you hadn't listened to the live episode already, where Jack Gow appears, we have a bit of a talk about his show. I highly recommend you go listen to that. But for those who aren't going to do that, although I recommend you do, because we do have a really good chat about it. This is a long-form storytelling stand-up about things like the housing market, existentialist nightmares brought on by work, and suicidal thoughts. So it does have a bit of content warning there. It has a strong message, and if I'm being honest, it has a bit of a I can't remember the name of the show. Chris Gethard did a show about his attempted suicide a little while back that I do, if I could remember the name of the show, I'd tell you to go watch it straight away. But if you just Google Chris Gethard, his stand-up special will come up. But it was a really strong show. And that because they have those sort of underlying tones, they sort of complement each other a bit. So they got a bit of a vibe, a bit of a Gethard vibe. If I'm being completely honest. Now, to change the tone a little bit, this is a play that I saw that was written and I think directed by Rose Bishop, a Melbourne-based comedian who I've worked with, full disclosure, I've worked with on The Leak, and I think she's a strong writer, strong performer. If you want to check out The Leak Season 5, there's episodes where she's one of the correspondents, and you can get an idea of the work that she does. Now, this is a bit different to that sort of work, because this is a play that's set out on an island, a fictional island town, who's fighting against the draining of their local swamp. Now, it's a comedy that edges on dark comedy, and but it was a really fun premise. If I'm being honest, I think it needed a little bit extra. I'm not sure exactly what it was, because the performers who were cast were fine, and the script had a nice arc to it. I think it all came together quite neatly. There was an element that when I was sitting there, and I couldn't quite place what it was, but something just needs a little more development, but it is definitely worth checking out. It's a good fun time, and watching the various strange bits and pieces come together quite neatly is a fun time in and of itself. Now I got an opportunity this festival to do a little bit of a one-off guest cameo for a show called Queens. Now, Queens is a... how to describe Queens? So, it's Caitlin Rogers. Anyone who saw Caitlin Rogers, can I get an amen? Caitlin Rogers is, again, in this show. She's with two other performers, Emily Carr and Alexandra Hines. They're all from Queensland. And they are talking about women. But in particular, they're sort of centering around Chappelle Corby as like a queen icon. It's a high-energy show. It's just very off the walls. I will admit there was bits where I was like a little bit lost about exactly what was happening. That being said, I hit my cue and I was right on time because I'm a professional. I don't need to know what's going on to know where my cue is. If you enjoy shows like Can I Get an Amen or maybe Louisa a Million, then this is a kind of show for you. I know it's not going to be for everybody. I understand that completely. Maybe don't overcommit if you're a bit unsure. Maybe watch some Louisa a Million stand up before getting into it, because then that'll give you a good idea of what you're going in for. That sort of like high positivity, high energy performance that I think goes best with young women. They seem to pull it off really well, and they seem to perform it quite I can't imagine myself, even at their age, like in my early 20s, doing a similar performance. It just seems to suit that style of performer quite well. There was good show, good fun. So moving on, this is a very different type of show. This is a New Zealand storyteller, Zanetti Productions. No, what's her name? Sorry, one second. Anya Tate Manning and Isabel McKinnon put this show together. Now, the speaker, this is a storytelling show called My Best Dead Friend. Jeez, I'm doing a terrible job with this. It's called My Best Dead Friend. And it's a New Zealand storyteller. And I really enjoyed this show a lot. It sort of had Will Greenway vibes about it, except it wasn't as sort of like whimsical. There was moments where it sort of just sat, and it was a bit more, a bit less magic reel. Not that he's too magic reel, but he definitely has shows that are border on magic realism, whereas this one was quite grounded in the past and reality. And it's because it's a story about the storyteller and her friends growing up in a small town in New Zealand you know, dreaming of escape and the struggles of not fitting in and the loss of one of their friends at quite a young age. And the show is just beautiful. It was just very touching and spoke to its audience at a very guttural level. And it just, I highly recommend if you, I don't know that they'll be back because they are a New Zealand artist, but if you, maybe if you get to go to the New Zealand Fringe and you see My Best Dead Friend is playing, you should go and see it because it would just hit you right in the feels. But I did mention Will Greenway, and I guess this is a good opportunity to segue into his show that I did see. His show with the slightly complicated title, These Trees, The Autumn Leaves Alone. Yes, there's a little pun in there. Leaves Alone. I'm not going to spend too much time on Will Greenway because I have consistently seen and enjoyed his work. He is the international bad boy of whimsical storytelling. And this story that he brings this year is set in Melbourne and is about two people meeting again, kind of for the first time, and getting to know each other again. And it's a beautiful show. He had his partner and son involved, doing a bit of singing and guitar, and they got to say a couple of lines. And yeah, I think his son's got the same quality that he has. They work well together. He didn't do much in the show, but they did work well together. And Will Greenway is a internationally renowned performer. He's gone to festivals around the world, and he's going to come back again. He'll probably have a new show, but you should definitely go and check him out. He's just beautiful work, just real beautiful work. And here we have our first friend of the show, Annie Louie, with her new show, Before I Forget. Now, Before I Forget is a comedy game show, which is about memory loss. So I was inspired by an event where she lost her pass at work. Oh, jeez. I hope I'm telling this story right. You'll have to see the show to make sure. If you see the show and I fuck this up, do tell me. Because I didn't write down exactly what it was. But I think it was essentially she'd lost her swipe card at work and turned out it was in the fridge. And that was what set the inspiration for the show. There's a bunch of high level of audience interaction, but it's pretty friendly audience interaction, you know, just like getting people to play games and stuff like that. And she talks about things like the patron saint of lost things and all this little bits and pieces about memory. I think the show came together quite well. I do quite like Annie as a performer, and she's like, if you're gonna do audience interaction with someone, I think you're in safe hands with Annie, because she's very non-threatening as a performer. Whereas this next performer, well, they're not quite as low key or low danger, for lack of a better term, as Annie. So this is Sam Campbell. I know, I'd never seen Sam Campbell before. He won the Barry last year, which is the most outstanding show for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. And we tried to get him on the podcast. We almost had it set up, but it just didn't quite work out in the end. And this is a true shame, because I think he'd been an interesting guy to talk to. But it's all right. Maybe he'll come back for the comedy festival. I wouldn't be too surprised. The show's called The Trough. And how to even be... It's because it's sketch, but it's not. It's character, but it's not. It's lots of props and video, and there's a lot going on stage. It's very funny, and it's sort of hard to reconcile with some bits why, and it might be that Sam is quite good at selling the particular brand of absurdist that he does. It's very absurd comedy, But you definitely, there's a clip of him, and a portion of this is in the show where he gives the best man speech. So if you go to the Comedy Up Late on YouTube and you watch Comedy Up Late's the Sam Campbell piece, you'll get a good idea of what the show is. But then, no, so I saw that before seeing the show, but then I went to see the show and I was still taken aback by just how crazy the show gets. It's a ton of fun. You're really going to enjoy the trough. So get around it if it comes back for Comedy Festival or Sydney Festival. He's based in Sydney, so no doubt he'll do a bunch of the festivals up that way. Now, this next show I've been meaning to see for a couple of festivals now. It has come and it has gone. It has come, it has gone, it has come, it has gone. So there's no doubt that it will travel. I've seen it's on the list for Perth shows. So if you're in Perth and this sounds interesting to you, you should go check it out because I had a great time. Cam Venn is the performer. The show is called Charles Horse Lays an Egg. It won the Golden Gibbo Award for the Comedy Festival last year, which is sort of like a financial boost for them. And geez, it's a fun show. It's just, there's puppetry and there's storytelling. It's a science fiction show. But don't let that scare you off if you're not into science fiction, because it doesn't really lean heavily on that. I mean, there's a guy in space and there's a space chicken. That's about as science fiction-y as it gets. Ish, without giving too much away, but you gotta go see this show. It is a ton of fun. There's definitely some audience interaction. I got to go up and puppeteer a particular prop, which was a lot of fun to do, and there is just a ton of silly stuff. It's just so ridiculous, this show. And you will, despite the fact that you don't know it yet, but you've been warned, and you will still be surprised by what you've been warned about. Go see the show and tell me if you were surprised by the obviousness of the surprise. I know I'm vagging on you and that's terrible, but I don't want to spoil it. I honestly don't want to spoil it. I think it's a great show, just so silly and fun, and it just begs to be seen live. It's the kind of thing that you want to be in the room for, so you really want to sit in that room and experience these moments with the performer, with that audience. There's just nothing like it. Now, this next show is listed as a fairy tale show, and it very much is, because it's told in the structure of a fairy tale with a once upon a time and sort of this story arc. The performer is Talia Neville, and it's all about herself. This effectively shows about herself as a child growing up into a performer and how she was told that she could do anything, but now growing up to do it, it's hard. And that she has to battle with anxiety and depression. But the story is told in such a way that it's, you go on that journey and it's not too rough, and you don't have to sort of sit through too many complicated energies in the room. No one's sort of reeling from listening to someone talk about their depression, which can happen in a performance. And it's not necessarily bad, because sometimes the show necessitates that sort of vibe. But this one, because it's such a fairy tale show, such a fairy tale vibe, you sort of want it to stay light. And it they managed to straddle that lightness and darkness quite nicely. We've got another New Zealand performer here. I say performer, it's a sketch group. The show is called Maggot. And it's a sketch show which centers around a pop group called the Sugar Babes. So like a Bardo type, I guess, an X Factor type. And they're giving up pop music to do art. So it sort of plays with the absurdity of pretentiousness in art and pretentious art. And it sort of like skewers these artists who like they want to give up whatever it is that they are known for and take a drastic swing out of what the public does know them for. And look, we as performers, like as an audience, sorry, we don't know who the Sugar Babes are. We don't know them, but we know them. Like these are cookie cutter band, Spice Girls type thing, and the variety of sketches and the humor on offer in the show was pretty incredible. You know, each sketch warrants the moment that you need and the time that you need to orient yourself into the world of the sketch. That's like a problem with some sketch shows is that you don't get time to integrate into the world of that particular sketch. It comes and it goes and it's done. Whereas I don't know how, I assume through lots of practice, maybe they're just gifted performers, but these ladies all they sit in each sketch just long enough, like just long enough for it to, you know what the sketch is, you know what that world is, then you leave it and you understand what it is. There is a high level of audience participation. You might end up wearing elf ears or making a bet on a rat fight for some cowboys who don't know how to express their latent feelings for each other. Like, that's the kind of show that you're going into if you go to see Maggot. I really enjoyed Maggot. It's such a fun, silly show that had a lot on offer. I didn't know what to expect going into it, but I walked out of it just pleasantly surprised. Speaking of pleasant shows, I'm gonna roll. Stark and Dormy. Wow. So, this is a group called the Bunk Puppets. And this show, Stark and Dormy, effectively it's a shadow puppet show about an alien creature landing on Earth. And, like, if you aren't sold on this show already, just based on alone, I don't know what else to tell you. Because it is an amazing show. This is like high energy and very distinctly unique in its use of puppets and its actual puppets. Like, because there's shadow puppets, they get to do some creative things and they get to create puppets in a different way. But at no point do they ever try to hide it. Like the shadows and the performers are often on display. There's not really places for them to hide. The screen for the shadow puppets is up high, so all the performers are down below it with the light going up. And there's a couple of unique aspects to the show that I found really interesting. Like at one point, not to give too much away, but at one point there's like a 3D experience. Like you go through the show with a section of the show with 3D glasses on, and it's just amazing and incredible. And it just, the show is just so good. You have to go see it. I had such a good time, and I haven't seen something like that since seeing Suitcase Royale a few years ago. That really reminded me a lot of Suitcase Royale because it was very at home aesthetic, and you know, all the things are sort of haphazard and put together in such a way, and you could see them running across the stage and just clunking bits and pieces together that are necessary for the next. Like there was no, like I said, there was no hiding it. It was all out in the open. It was beautiful to see. Now this next show is Bob Franklin. Now Bob Franklin is a Australian stand-up. I think he's Melbourne based, if I remember correctly. And the show is called Yours Sincerely, which shares the same name as the title of his book. So in a very real way, it was a way of promoting and plugging his book, but at the same time, it was a separate entity from his book, and it involved storytelling and stand-up. And it, he uses here's the idea of selling the book and using the book as promotion and using the show to promote the book as a device within the show itself. So, you know, that in and of itself, that sort of meta commentary is quite fun. And look, it does get pretty serious in some points, and you do wonder, at least I did, I wondered about the reliability of the narrator as he remembers his past misdeeds. But at no point does it get too dark, and it will definitely leave you in a good place towards the end of the show. There's a lot of really fun stuff in there, and it's kind of interesting to see and hear about the complicated past of people like Mr. Franklin. Which brings us to the next show. A show called Write Loud and Clear About What Hurts, which is just such an evocative title. And that's what drew me to the show. I was just like, yes, it doesn't matter what this show is about, I'm interested. You've got me. I'm in. So it was written by Lucy Moyer, who I had not heard of before seeing this show. She was also one of the performers in it. And it's a play set in a series of therapy sessions. I thought it had quick and witty dialogue, which centered around the insecurities accrued through modern living and the falseness of some of the blames that we place for those feelings. You know, both of the characters, so the therapist and the therapy, the therapy seeker, they were both afforded moments to shine, though the play is clearly dominated by the actress who plays Sarah, which I do believe is Lucy. I mean, I guess that's why she's the standout actress, because why would you write the standout part not for yourself? She's the woman who's seeking therapy, and she's a woman whose life is troubled by, to put it in, this is a direct quote, something she read online, right? So, and it's just an amazing, like, device that they use to push through so many of the therapy sessions, is that the reading of these articles online is causing her distress. A great line that really stuck in my mind is, 2/3 of life is fiction and imagination. If so much of my life is made up, why is it so boring? Ah, oh, such a good line! Such a good line. Ugh. Just really, it's one of those plays that will really speak to people of a certain age who kind of feel stuck, I guess, or like they should be moving along further. Like, if you feel like that about life and about a lot of things, this is the play for you. Sorry. All right. Next show is Claire Healy. Now, Claire, I did not know. It seems to be the running theme of this, which is good, you know what I mean? But it's good that I let you know who I know and who I don't know. Claire Healy, her show is parenthesis get a, end parenthesis real job. So it's a cabaret. It's a cabaret about not ever having a real job. And it's a celebration of the places that it can take you if you're open to trying something new. Claire was quite charming. I quite enjoyed her show. There wasn't too much audience interaction. You should do a little bit of asking about, you know, what people did and, you know, what kind of jobs they've held, what they currently do, how they feel about their jobs. But that's all within the context and theme of the show, where it's all about how she's never had a job that has given sick or annual leave, you know what I mean? And she's in, I don't know how old she is. I think she said she was in her late 20s, maybe. But I think Claire did a really good job. I think it was a fun show that I came out of feeling a bit better about my relationship with some of my jobs. I've at least had sick and annual leave from some of my jobs. I've even got long service leave, if you can believe that. Fuck. Long service leave. That's depressing. Right. Claire Kavanagh. Her show was called Literally. She's a Sydney-based performer. I'd not seen her before. This is a character sketch comedy show with a single performer. Her work was delivered with, like, great high energy, and it made the show a real fun experience. Like, weirdly, another one with, like, high amount of audience interaction. So, like, if you're afraid of audience interaction, unfortunately, this show is not for you, because she will drag you into a scene. Literally drag you into a scene for one guy. But, I quite enjoyed the show. I mean, I don't think her audience interaction is too intrusive, but it's gonna happen. Like, she will talk to you, maybe she'll hand you a prop. You know, there's a few things that might happen. She got a great friendly demeanor, which I think really helped facilitate the interaction, really made the audience to feel safe to go on the stage with her and to sort of go on this journey with her. I do recommend, if you get a chance, checking Claire Kavanagh out. It was directed by Bridie Connell, who was one of the correspondents and writers for Tonightly. If you enjoyed Tonightly, you might get a little kick out of this show, because it's got a bit of that. Bridie Connell was the performer who mostly did the songs. So if you enjoyed that element of Tonightly, then I can see you enjoying Literally. All right. So, another new performer for me, Chloe Black. The show is called Transistor Sister. Now, Chloe takes us on a journey from her life before realizing that she was trans into her newfound observations of life from the perspective of being a woman who used to be a man. And it was a really honest and heartwarming show. I enjoyed it a lot. I found Chloe to be a good stand-up in her own right, and the material was very accessible, especially for someone like me, who just really doesn't know anything about what a journey like that is, or those thoughts, or just, you know, I have no personal connection with the LGBTQI community. Not to say that I don't know people who are in it, but, like, it's not my life experience. So to find that going into that show and that the material just spoke and was just easy and accessible, you should go check it out. I think Chloe did a great job. There's some good fun wordplay in there. It's not just about the transition, but there's also, you know, some jokes from before, and just some jokes that were written while doing one of those mindless jobs. It's a good show. This next show is a cabaret. It's called Foreign Women, and it was written by Nicola Cupia. I'm going to say Cupia, but I'm not convinced that that's correct. And Sandy Whitham. The show is about their family history. It's a cabaret about their grandmothers moving from Poland and Canada to Australia. And I had quite a good time. I don't have too much to say about the show. The songs were great. The music was fun. The stories were, you know, relatable and heartwarming. And these two, like, they definitely came from, I'm pretty confident that they came from, like, a maybe some sort of VCA or something similar background, because they had their transitions down tight. It just made me so happy to see a show that knew stagecraft and knew how to put their transitions together. Oh, it was just a joy to watch. It was just that, like, as great as the show was, it just made me so happy to see a well-structured transitional show. Yeah, well-structured show with strong transitions. But the content of the show is great. It's good fun. You should check out Foreign Women if they bring it back. It does bill itself as a comedy cabaret, so I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they bring it back from Comedy Festival, or if maybe they tour it to some of the other fringes. It does seem to sit well in the fringe oeuvre. Alright. Now, people who have listened to the live shows will be aware of this next performer, Angus Brown, friend of the show, and his show Everest. Jeez, Everest was a great show. I was genuinely surprised I wasn't really sure. Like, even having spoken to Angus and seen his stand-up, I wasn't quite sure what to expect going into Everest. And I'm glad that I wasn't, because I would have been wrong, and it was quite a surprise. So basically, it's a part play, part stand-up comedy. And it's an exploration of ambition, and essentially it's a journey into the depths of self-delusion. To this idea of, like, being a guy who thinks, like, a wildly underqualified guy who thinks he can scale Everest, and comparing that to the idea of essentially being a performer, but, you know, effectively being a stand-up. And those two worlds, which don't really have anything to do with each other, but he still manages to pull together quite a show. He will be back for Comedy Festival, and he'll probably tour around a bit. I haven't seen him on the lineup for any of the other festivals yet, but if you see him, especially if he's doing Everest, go check it out. I was genuinely surprised, but good fun show. Alright. So this next one, seeing as we're in the Friends territory, this is Old Friends. Now, we had Pat McCaffrey on the show, and some of the stand-up that Pat did does appear in Old Friends. That's not to say that he'll continue to do that forever, or even that this show will get another run. But Pat and Nick O'Connell are both currently Melbourne-based stand-ups. And these ones are really easy. Two-hander show. One does 25 minutes. The other does 25 minutes. There's not too much more to it. They both were strong performers. Pat's very political-based, and Nick is very anecdote-based. So if you just want a good, simple show with two strong stand-ups, go check out Old Friends. Now, this next performer, I guess, all right, I'll round out the ones who appeared on the podcast with Barney Huankin, if you didn't listen to the live show where the three of these performers performed, Barney does, he has his show Taphead, which I really hope he brings back in some capacity and travels around a bit, because it's a beautiful show. It's about, like, exploration of self and identity, and even though it sort of centralizes around this play/stand-up format, weirdly, in a similar way to the idea that Everest had part play, part stand-up. This has part play, part stand-up, but the two end up merging in a much clearer and obvious way in Taphead, where when the anthropomorphized Tap, who's been doing open mic comedy, and the performer sort of start to meld a bit more. And, you know, it's very much a show about loneliness and identity and just sort of finding a place in the world. There's just so many beautiful moments that are in this show, and I just really urge you to go check out Taphead if you get a chance. I really do hope he brings it back. It was such a lovely, lovely show. We're near the end. There's only a couple more shows, and then we'll move on. Can't believe I've even made it this far. Now, this show is called Purgatory. And older viewers of the... older listeners of the podcast will remember I talked about a play called Cactus and the Mime a few years ago by a group that now go by the name Prickly Silence, which you can see where that name comes from, Cactus and the Mime. They brought this show together, this show Purgatory, which in essence is a play about waiting, hence Purgatory, Purgatory, as a story about waiting, right? But it is so much more than that. The play is broken up into short vignettes with interactions of two characters. And the details from those vignettes, they start to tie together. And the bigger arc of the story emerges. Now, for me personally, I preferred Cactus and the Mime. I thought it was because it was a single arching story that was a bit more upfront about itself. That was a story about these two children's performers struggling with their relationship. And this was a bit more abstract and a bit more esoteric. It was still a great show, and I think both the performers give everything that they have to this. They really commit to this story and this idea, and they make it work. It's a tough show, and they make it work. So give it a chance if it comes back around. I feel like it's a show that is worth making it to the end. Like some shows, even though the final detail might be the detail that ties it all together, it sort of wasn't worth the journey. But this one, it's worth the journey. You just stay with it. Just trust me. I don't want to give too much away. Just stay with it. Go check them out. I think the guys at Prickly Silence are doing good work. All right, we got two more, and then we're going to wrap it up. Now, I tried to get this next performer for the podcast, but unfortunately, we couldn't make it work. That's not to say that I'm not going to try again, because her show was amazing. The show's called Bella Green is Charging for It. And this is a show produced by Rose Bishop, written by Bella Green. And this Bella's just recently broken into the world of stand-up. And she has come from the world of sex work. So she's done a lot of things. She's been a dancer and a stripper, and she's worked in a viewing peep show, and she's a sex worker, or I think she still is. It wasn't entirely clear. I assume she still is. And she's just talking about her experience as a sex worker, and some of the sort of quibbles and funny little things that happen. There's a lot of information in the show, and I think you'll learn a lot, and you'll learn about just sort of the stuff that these kind of guys. It's like the weirdest workplace comedy ever. Yeah, it's just such a great show, and she's a naturally strong performer, and I think they pulled together, there's like mixed media elements and slight sketches, and the show's pulled together really well, and it just speaks to an audience who really has no idea about this world, but it pulls them all along, and it just gets them to where they need to be to understand the context of the ideas and the sketches and all the multimedia bits and pieces. It's just so well constructed. I was really impressed by the show. Not only the quality and the content of the show, but just the stagecraft. Just the stagecraft. I'm going to go back to it. Good transitions. Just a good goddamn transition. Just know how to keep your audience engaged. I would say a lot of that comes down to the director. I don't know the director. Her name's Caitlin Staples. So I would say that comes down to a lot of her influence, maybe some of Rose's influence, because she comes from a performance background as well. So just it's good to see these guys pulling together and creating just a wonderful piece of work. And speaking of wonderful pieces of work, this last show. I think, I'm not quite sure, but it's just, for what it is, might have been my favourite show of this festival. And that's a big call, because there's like Jack Gao and this Bella Green show, and there's just so many great shows, and like Fishlace Jones, there's so many strong shows. But this one, it's called Rocky the Third, and it is a two-person play which reenacts Rocky III, but in Shakespearean language, which, beautiful. These two performers were amazing. They fed off each other so well. They had the Shakespearean verse down. They did just some incredible things, given there's only two performers playing every part in the movie. Oh, they just knew the context. They knew what Shakespeare was about, and they understood that this was a good choice, not only because they got to do it the fun Rocky the Third title, but because of the story. I mean, I guess spoiler alert for Rocky III, if you need that, but you know, the death of a mentor, the dethroning of a champion, just these classic Shakespeare ideas and stories tied together into this very minimalist, ridiculous comedy, and for nothing else, like for nothing else, you have to go see this show to hear their rendition of Eye of the Tiger done in Shakespearean verse. Wow, such a beautiful piece. Oh, that's so good. And that's my fringe. That was my fringe this year, Melbourne 2018. I'm going to take a quick break, grab some water, and when I come back, I'm going to make a couple of quick recommendations, because this is still the nature of this show. I'll make some comedy recommendations, and then I'll wrap it up. So just be a quick second. All right, I'm back. Now, I'm really not sure how this is going to work, because, you know, there's nobody for me to introduce the clip to, except for you guys, I guess. But, yeah, normally Marty's here, or I've got a guest here. The two performers that I've picked, I will say this now, the reason I picked the two performers that I picked is because they've had recent success, or recent association with the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, right? So that's the, you know, I picked the songs because they have a sort of fringy vibe about them. I picked these performers because they were directly related to the Fringe Festival. So this first one is Laura Lex. Maybe I'll play this clip for you, and I'll tell you why I played it. All right, so here's Laura Lex. That's with two X's, Laura Lex.
Laura, I suffer from depression and generalised anxiety disorder, and I've chosen to be a comedian, so we can chat that later. I had a very specific thing happen to me. I used to be the happiest person you'll ever meet, and then a few years ago, my wonderful husband and I decided to start trying for a baby. See, I love my husband more than anything, and I love babies more than anything. So I thought, okay, this will work. We'll get our wet bits, put them together, make a baby of our own. That's the fun way to do it, isn't it? So we did. We started trying for a baby. We got 3 months in, and I was diagnosed with depression and generalized anxiety disorder. And we found out that my husband can't have children because of my personality. If you're making that noise now, you're going to be in trouble by the end of the show. I got depression instead of a baby. It turns out though, depression and children, very similar things, actually. All my friends have got kids now. I've got a 22-month-old depression, and you cannot tell me apart from my new mum friends. We're all overtired, we've all got stains on our clothes, and none of us are as much fun at parties as we used to be. I just go to quieter support groups. Same padded play area, though. I named my depression. I thought, sod it. When life hands you lemons and all that crap, isn't it? So I thought, sod it. Right, all my friends with flesh babies have named theirs. What should we call the misery fetus? But it's quite hard, isn't it? What do you call a ball of obsessive thoughts? So I thought, I suppose people with actual kids, they name them after where they were conceived, don't they? So I did the same with the depression. I called it Inside Every Silence. ISIS for short. Figured it worked. let's name depression after a terrorist cell, because that's what it is. It's hard to pin it down. It undermines your hope in a future, and articles about it in the tabloids tend to be dangerously misguided.
Fuck, I love that piece. Now, that's a short clip from an excerpt, I guess, from the BBC storytelling show Ouch. It's the only... I've been struggling to find... It is online, if you have access to BBC iView or the BBC player. You can watch the entire clip online, but I've been struggling to get that to work. So, at the moment, that's all I have access to, but I would recommend going and listening to the full thing, the full storytelling hour, and she's just so good. And the show is called Trying. It was she did the Edinburgh Fringe, and I think she's touring the show a bit. At least I hope she's touring the show, and I do hope she comes out this way, because I would love to sit down and just see that entire show. I think it sounds incredible, and she's a very funny stand-up. I've been watching a lot of her since I discovered her. I went down a little rabbit hole with her comedy, and it's just she's so good. She's just so good at exploring such a difficult topic, and you know, that's essentially what Fringe is about. Essentially, you know, like these big notable storytelling shows with these long hour-long arcs. She's, you know, she talks about they try to have a baby, like you heard in the clip. They were trying to have a baby, and she ends up with depression instead. So that's like the crux of the story. I just hope she comes over here so I can see the show in person, because I don't think I'm going to be over there anytime soon. If you're listening to this in that area, if you happen to live in the UK, maybe go check her out. Go check her out and tell me how good it was. Tell me how much of a good time you had. I'd love to hear. I'm very jealous. I want to go see her. All right. That was nice and quick. Like I said, this will be a short podcast. Let me just cue up this second clip for you. Now, this second performer, her name's Heidi Regan. And she got the Best New Comedy Award in the 2017 Edinburgh. So, you know, she's had a bit of a connection with the Edinburgh Festival. I assume she'll come around with a festival show at some point. I'm going to be keeping an eye on this one because I think she's very funny. And I think after you hear this clip, you'll enjoy it too.
And welcome the brilliant Heidi Regan!
Hi. Hey, lovely to be here. My name's Heidi. I've been told when I do comedy that I'm a slow burner, so get ready for some fun later. Very, very exciting for later. But while we wait for the fun, I want to get a bit serious, because we're in very dark, very scary times right now. And I keep losing political arguments, so I'm trying to practice being more topical on stage. So I've been thinking about Hitler. specifically Hitler as a baby. I know women, we get to a certain age, it's all babies, babies, babies. And the Third Reich. what are we like? But I've been thinking about that famous philosophical dilemma. I'm sure you've all heard it, if you had a time machine, would it be morally right to go back and kill Hitler as a baby? I think it goes on like, considering you could be using that time machine to go back and kill baby Stalin or the baby who started climate change. It's about choosing which is the greater threat to humanity. You've got a time machine, you're going to kill a baby. that's what they're for. But I've been thinking about, I don't think you'd have to kill Hitler at all, because he was born in a very dark period of history that scholars refer to as BDVD, like before DVD. like before this golden age of binge television we're in now, that began with DVD box sets, now there's Netflix, HBO, Amazon, all making these like long, intelligent TV series are making humanity finally think about really big ideas for the first time ever. So I would go back and I would get a young Hitler, like maybe like 7 years old, like before he went full Hitler. like a prequel Hitler, like a, what was Vader's, like an Anakin Hitler. And first I would make little 7-year-old Hitler watch all of Game of Thrones. And I would say, now do you see the futility of violence? And he would say, yeah. Then we would watch all the House of Cards, and I would say, now do you see how hollow is the pursuit of power, how it gets a bit boring around season 3. Then we would watch The Sopranos, of course, just because I've heard great things, but I've never had time to watch it, so... If I've taken a week off work to re-educate Hitler, then, like, no time like the present. Or the past. Eh? That Hitler will laugh at that. That's one of those, like, you had to be there type jokes. Then we would get back on it and we would watch all the Harry Potter DVDs. And at the end I would say, who did you identify with in that? And he would say, Harry Potter. And I'd say, first, it's pronounced Harry. You idiot. And secondly, you've walked right into my clever trap because, fun fact, child Hitler, it's thought that J.K. Rowling actually based one of the characters in this on you and a lot of things you're going to do. But it wasn't Harry. You're going to feel so stupid. It was the villain Voldemort. You're going to grow up to be the villain. And Hitler will be like, no, or nine. And I'll say, yes. And then I'll explain to him World War II and I'll say, but it's not going to happen now because I have taught you the importance of empathy and good TV scheduling. And child Hitler will say, but have we done enough? Like, if I don't start this war, could another baddie not take my place? And I'll say, no, you're literally the worst. just leave the politics to the grown-ups, Hitler. And Hitler will say, but I mean, was I just a symptom of the inherent anti-Semitism across Europe at the time and growing instability from economic depression? And I'll say, well, they didn't cover that in Harry Potter. and he'll say, well, just simply, what were the main factors in the rise of fascism? And I'll say, it's a great question. And I am going to Google it. But I think in the meantime, I'm going to have to go back and just kill you as a baby. And Hitler will say, you're going to try to kill me as a baby. Don't you remember that Voldemort tried to kill Harry Potter as a baby? And I'll be like, nine! I have become the monster. What were the odds? Can't win political arguments even when I've scripted them myself. I was a bit nervous about talking about this tonight because I was worried that you guys would think that to joke in any way, no matter how off subject I got about such a serious subject, it was very flippant and insensitive. Whereas obviously I'm trying to use comedy to make a very serious and nuanced point I've thought very hard about just how bad House of Cards got after season 2. So we have to face this stuff full on. So thank you for going with me on that and have a lovely night.
She's so good. God, she's so good. Just that piece, like, that is the best. Like, there's been jokes about that idea of going back in time to kill Hitler before, but I don't think anything has deconstructed it in such a good way. Like, it just picks at it from every potential angle. Even that, like, that Harry Potter stuff, like, she would have to have engineered that so well to be able to bring it back to being Harry Potter. Ah, it's such a wonderful set, and I'm looking forward to at some opportunity seeing more of Heidi and just what else she's got. She seems like a really switched on woman and just incredible stand-up chops, just a real great start. I can see why that piece won, why that was a winning stand-up set. It's just so good to see the audience going along with it as well, because it's not that much of an esoteric idea, but you know, it could be handled quite poorly, but that's such a Such a good set. Anyway, that's going to bring us to the end for this. Come out and see me if you can. I'm in Tasmania for Fringe at the Edge of the World. I've got my show. I got bit by a monkey once. Come see me at Fringe World in Perth because I got my show. I got bit by a monkey once. And we're doing some live podcasts at Fringe World at Lazy Susan's towards the end of the Fringe World Festival. They're going to be a lot of fun. And then I'll be heading off to Adelaide for the very first time ever for the Adelaide Fringe, and I'm a little bit scared because I don't know anybody in Adelaide. I mean, I don't know anybody in Perth or Tasmania either. So please, guys, come out and see all the shows. There's going to be a couple of live Just for Funnies in Adelaide, and I'll be doing the solo show I Got Bit by a Monkey Once in all of the festivals. It's a storytelling show. It's a lot of fun. If you want a sample of it, go back and listen to the live shows from this Fringe Festival, because I do a sample of one of the stories in there. So come check us out. If you want to support the podcast, you can kick us a couple of bucks by going to my Bandcamp and just throw a couple of bucks our way. That'd be really great. I'd appreciate it if you could support the podcast that way. And if you can't do that, then just give us a nice rating on iTunes or wherever, you know, all that sort of stuff. Tell someone about the podcast. Come see us live. Maybe come seeing us live is definitely the best way to support the podcast, because that means that we can do more live shows and we can sort of travel the show around, and maybe we can come to wherever you are rather than you having to sit around and wait for a festival for us to come out. I'd love to tour a couple of live shows. I think this would be a really fun opportunity to get to meet some of you guys and to get out and see the country a bit more. So please come see us live. And, Marty will be back at some point. He's going overseas, taking a bit of a trip. So we'll see when he comes back. All right. Thanks for listening. And, I guess just quickly, like I said at the top, the song that we're going to go out on is, Chopper Reed. So from Interview with a Madman. It's just another track off that album. And, give it a listen. Give it a listen, and just to see what they came up with. At the very least, as a bit of an experiment, it's a little bit of fun. All right. See you next time.
Yeah, you fucking froze. How you going, fucking froze? You got a head like a robber's dog, froze. Has anyone fucking told you? You got a fucking head like 5 miles of bad road.
This is real life. And we speak on the truth. Chopper Reed meets Fraze, and we creep in the booth.
It's chop chop, motherfucker, are you ready to shoot?
Yeah, Fraze,
let them have it, put their necks in the noose.
This is real life, and we speak on the truth. Chopper Reed meets Fraze, and we creep in the booth.
It's chop chop, motherfucker, are you ready to kill?
Yeah, Fraze,
let them have it, so we deadly still.
Thomas Dam, back in my days growing up, little boy turned monster, the evil showing up. Little by little, the symptoms getting worse. The anger brewing stronger, then venom births a curse. Mum suggested mental asylum, to test the violence, the sound of siren. Deep in my memory, forget detention, I'm off to shock therapy. What they're not telling me is shock therapy makes me hate my enemy twice as much. Defied the touch of the system, but now I'm drifty. A young Chopper Reed, a gun-stocking thief. I'll rob a drug dealer, cock the Glock and leave. 1970s, I'm fucking qualified. Rob massage parlors, then a homicide. Made, I'm a criminal, born personified. I try to tell the truth, but ladies hate my honest side. This is real life, and we speak on the truth. Chopper Reed meets Fraze, and we creep in the booth.
It's chop chop, motherfucker, are you ready to shoot?
Yeah, Fraze,
let them have it, put their necks in the noose.
This is real life, and we speak on the truth. Chopper Reed meets Fraze, and we creep in the booth.
It's chop chop, motherfucker, are you ready to kill?
Yeah, Fraze,
let them have it, so we deadly still. I spit the flows off, you chop their toes off. I smash and beat you up a cut and take their nose off. I know these hosts off, claiming that they own spots. Only thing they own is some silicon tits and Botox. This ain't a big budget movie, this is street raps. It's real life with Chopper Reed and Fraze and E-Cats. I wanna beat chaps, show them where the beef's at. Take their teeth with pliers, chop them, pop them in the kneecaps. I'm out in Hoddle Street, cruising to Richmond, bumping Chopper Reed's LP, up in a system. Getting pissed with a crew that'll carry the Roscoes. As hard, pure as Johnny Ferrer. Weather and Voss. dust goes. You not bro, tough when the shots blow. Better duck Lewis or you crush in the dust, yo. I don't wanna politic, here's a statement, it's fact. It's Chopper Reed, L4C, dub on the track.
This is real life, and we speak on the truth. Chopper Reed makes phrase, and we creep in the booth.
Hey chop chop, motherfucker, were you ready to shoot?
Yeah, phrase.
Let them have it, put their necks in the noose.
This is real life, and we speak on the truth. Chopper Reed makes phrase, and we creep in the booth.
Hey chop chop, motherfucker, were you ready to kill?
Yeah, phrase.
Let them have it, so we deadly still. Yeah, big phrase. Crooked Eye, 2005. Mark ran a Chopper Reed on the track. Fuckers, L4C dub. Where you at?